You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. 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 I want to reverse my aging. I don't really care about being able to run a mile or anything like that. I just want to reverse my brain aging. I feel there's a definite difference between my brain now and my brain when I was younger. By the way, culturally, the brain we know ages, not only medically, but culturally, you have to kind of get used to being the wise older person as opposed to the sharp young person. And we had a great conversation with Arthur Brooks about this. He wrote the very excellent book, I cannot recommend it enough, called From Strength to Strength. That podcast we did with Arthur Brooks changed my life about how I viewed my brain aging, but also my prior podcast, several podcasts with David Sinclair about the aging process has also changed my life. I have used the supplements he recommended. I have made the lifestyle changes he recommended. This was back in 2019. But I knew David has done a lot of research in the past 5 years since his book Lifespan came out. And I wanted to see what the state of his research was. So he came on the podcast. I'm very grateful. He doesn't do a lot of podcasts. He came on the podcast. He's had some incredible discoveries and new information to report on and gave me some real insight. We talked about everything related to what he's doing on anti-aging, what he's discovered since the last time I've had him on. And we had a special request from people that I also asked him about testosterone. So towards the end of the podcast, I asked about that, and his answer was very interesting. And here's David.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
But yeah, this is a... Can you see this one, James? This one here is, do you recognize those guys?
I don't.
Okay, so that here are their signatures, Francis Crick and Jim Watson.
Okay, the founders of DNA, or the discoverers of DNA.
Yeah, so they're my inspiration every day.
Well, it's interesting because one of the things I want to talk about is a recent paper you published The Information Theory of Aging, where you discuss how DNA essentially it's an interesting model of aging. You basically discuss how DNA loses information about who we were the moment we were born, and that's what basically triggers the aging process. And if somehow we could keep that information intact or reprogram the DNA through the epigenetics, if we can keep that information intact, we could reverse aging. Am I at a 20,000 foot level? Am I summarizing the paper okay? It's a very complicated paper.
Yes, you did a great job. You're welcome to come work in my lab if you want.
Can you give me an honorary PhD? I'll do it if you can give me an honorary PhD.
Sure, I can write you up one. I'm not sure Harvard would let me, but we can have something for you. But yeah, the information theory of aging has really developed since we last talked. It was about a couple of years ago. What we were proposing is that the aging process isn't just wear and tear. We're not just like cars that run out of gas or break down. We're more like computers. And there's information that we get from our parents, both genetic and epigenetic. So genetic is the DNA, and the epigenetic is the control of the DNA. Because, of course, every cell is different. They need to turn the genes on in different ways. That's the epigenome. And what I'm proposing is that in the information theory of aging, or ITOA, I-T-O-A, is that it's the loss of this control system that's the main problem during aging. And what happens is over time, through various insults to the cells or bad living, bad lifestyles, that program that controls the DNA gets lost over time. And cells forget how to work. They become old, dysfunctional, and we get diseases and die. A corollary of the hypothesis that's, I think, the most exciting is that unlike mutations in DNA, which are largely irreversible, the epigenome is malleable. And we believe there's a backup copy of that information in every cell that can be flipped like a reset switch to reinstall this epigenetic software in the body. And therefore, that would be true age reversal.
And that's your theory, that there's this backup copy. And I guess the idea of DNA is that, every piece of DNA contains all the information about who you are. And so somewhere there's DNA that hasn't been kind of, lost information. So somewhere there's a backup that has all the correct DNA for you.
That's right. And the control systems, that's the important thing. So some of the evidence that this is true or could be correct is that we can clone animals, even monkeys, from old cells. You take a skin cell from an old monkey, you can generate a new monkey. And that monkey starts out life fresh. It's new, it's rejuvenated, and it goes on to live a normal, healthy lifespan. That tells us that the information to be young is still in cells. And that, yes, we have mutations. There's no question that we lose some of the DNA, but largely the information is intact.
Can I ask, how would you be able to tell if it wasn't intact? So let's say you took some skin cells from an old monkey and cloned it, meaning, put it in an egg and, I don't know, had some monkey give birth to it. I don't know actually what cloning really does, but how would you know that the information wasn't stored there? Because the monkey would be born old, or what would happen?
Exactly. The lineage of monkeys that have been cloned would eventually die out because you'd get older and older monkeys, and the monkeys would age prematurely, but they don't. They live normally. So that's that to me says that the information is still there. You just need to reset the software.
And so there's two things. One is basically, what are the habits or lifestyles that increase this information loss on the control so it no longer kind of manages the DNA correctly and we get diseased and die? So what are the bad habits? And then what are the ways to restore things so that, or can you restore things so that the controls basically reset the cells if they're diseased and we're youthful again?
Yeah. Well, some of my colleagues get upset when I talk about age reversal. In my lab, there's no doubt that we can do this. We can see that cells and even tissues as complex as the eye can be reset permanently. We can restore blindness in mice and now monkeys.
Humans, if we can do that in monkeys, why don't we do that already in humans?
Well, we'll do it next. Why do they always wait? Well, the regulatory authorities want to see safety first before you stick a gene therapy into the eye of a human. But it looks like we'll be able to do that next year if all goes well.
But can I ask about that? Like, shouldn't I, as a human, be allowed to decide about what I want to do with my eyes as opposed to saying, oh, well, the FDA says I'm not allowed to try this yet. I'm going to listen to the FDA. Like, do you listen to the post office worker about how to live your life, or do you listen to yourself?
Well, yeah, I have libertarian streaks myself. I think that everybody should have a right to do to their body what they want, as long as it doesn't hurt someone else. Including suicide. So as long as you're mentally stable. So I'm with you on that. What society has evolved to do, the way it's engineered now, is that unfortunately not everybody is well informed and can be convinced that something is safe and useful by, you know, who knows who. Could be a doctor, could be some snake oil salesman. And so those laws are there to protect people who don't have enough information or don't have enough education to make those decisions. Some people disagree. I just heard this morning that there's a group, I think they said it was in South America, that is establishing an area of the planet where you can do more extreme things that are not yet approved by governments. But I'm not involved in that. You know, I've still got my sights set on getting these medicines tested for safety and approved through regular methods. The other problem, James, is that the methods that we have right now to reverse aging, like the one I'm talking about for the eye, not anybody can just make this in their garage. Just making the material for the human trial is costing the company $10 million. So this is not cheap yet. But I am working on that. We're working in my lab on small molecules, so chemicals that you could take as a pill. They could reverse aging, we hope, or at least slow it. And do it for $10. Now, when that happens, imagine there's, you know, a drink that you can get at the gas station that truly rejuvenates you. That would be quite an interesting world. That's the one that I'm working on right now. That's the forefront of work in my lab.
Well, okay. So I know, for instance, we've talked before about NMN and resveratrol. I don't know how to say it.
You just said it right.
Yeah, and NR, which you're not as believer in, but it's interesting. The guys at Thorne are big believers in NR because they figure as a precursor to NMN. You know, we've talked about all this on other podcasts, so I won't dive too into it. But there's various debate about what supplements are anti-aging: NMN, NR, resveratrol. Then we also spoke about Yamanaka factors, which seem to be very likely to reduce aging, but might have side effects that are dangerous, like cancer, for instance, which would increase aging. And so I don't know where you are right now with all of this research. Maybe you can give me an update on that.
Yeah, sure. So the NR and the NMN story, that debate is, I'm not in that debate. There's a lot of people online who are pumping that up as though it's a controversial. I'm a believer in NAD and the precursors of any sort. Now, I've put a stake in developing medicines based on a whole variety of NAD precursors, both natural and synthetic, and have been working to raise money to make those into medicines for the last 10 years. I think NR is a very interesting molecule. More studies need to be done. So the controversy, just to be clear, is not what it seems. And I'm certainly not out there promoting one thing or another. And I don't sell anything on the internet, just also to be clear. If anyone sees my name on a website selling something like NMN, it's not with my permission. In fact, I spend more money than I want to each year on legal action to try and curtail that activity.
Really? People are trying to sell stuff saying, David Sinclair recommends you
all
take
the time.
This.
Every day there's something I get alerted to. It's constant. Yeah.
Wow. I take all of them. I take NMN. Well, I take NMN and I take Thorne's resveratrol, which I guess is resveratrol.
Well, I do something similar. I still take resveratrol in my yogurt in the morning, a teaspoon, and then the NMN, up to a gram of that. And I'm still researching it in my lab as well, trying to see what the upside downsides are, how it works. We're about to submit a paper that that pinpoints how resveratrol works in the mouse, how it's really acting. But yeah, I'm a strong believer in those two molecules. You can think of NMN or NR as the gas. So the gas that you fill up the car with, the petrol for those in the Commonwealth. And then the accelerator pedal is the resveratrol. So they work together on the enzymes that control aging that I work on called the sirtuins. And those sirtuins control the epigenome. And so it's all linked as part of this information theory of aging. And so by taking resveratrol and NMN, my hope, I haven't proven it yet, but my hope and belief is that it's activating my sirtuin defenses, turning on those enzymes, giving them gas, giving the accelerator pedal a push, and keeping me younger for longer. What I can tell you so far is it hasn't hurt me. I do measure my blood work every few months, and my blood work looks fine. But, you know, it's an experiment in progress. I hope one day to perhaps outlive my critics. That would be a nice thing.
That's the best revenge.
Yeah, we'll see. And there are a fair number of those. But really, I'm just trying to keep my head down, focus on the research. And you asked me what's the latest thing. Because the NMN research that we did, we're still doing a bit of it. We just are about to submit a paper showing that NMN extends lifespan in mice, especially female mice. And so that's coming. Most of my research now has been directed at understanding the software of the body beyond the sirtuins. What else is involved in causing aging to occur, and how do you reset that? And we had a paper published in Cell in January last year that showed evidence that changes to the epigenome can drive aging. So we made a mouse. It took us 13 years to do this research. Made a mouse where we could disrupt the epigenome. We did this by creating cuts to the DNA when the mice were young. As far as we can tell, that didn't disrupt the DNA. The DNA just got put back together quite easily. But the epigenome got disrupted. And we know that damage to cells disrupts the epigenome over time. And we'll get to this, but stopping damage to your cells is one good way to slow down aging, because it slows down epigenetic changes, slows down the software corruption. But this paper, what it showed was that we could drive aging forwards by disrupting the epigenome. And we could also use three of the Yamanaka factors. There are normally four used, but a particular subset of three was able to safely reverse aging in those mice.
So you disrupted the epigenome by damaging the DNA, and then using three of the Yamanaka factors, which I'll ask you to explain again, but by using these, it kind of brought the epigenome back to start again.
Yeah, well, not fully. We look at how the genes are switched on and off, and we can measure all of the genes, and we can see whether the majority go back to an earlier youthful pattern. And we saw that. It was highly significant. But did they go back to being age zero? No. And in fact, we wouldn't want them to, because age zero, as you said, is cancer. Mm-hmm. So the trick for us was, we definitely are standing on the shoulders of the great Shinya Yamanaka, who discovered that the four genes, that four particular genes that are normally turned on by embryos, if you put them into adult cells in the dish, they become stem cells, going back to age zero. But you don't want to do that, because that's a cancer cell. So the trick for us was to find a combination of those genes that was safe. And even though theoretically we might be causing cancer, that's a concern. But in practice, we have not seen any negative effects in our treatments in mice or in monkeys so far, which bodes well. We still need to do more work. But using three instead of four seems to be the magic recipe.
Why three instead of four? Like, how did you find out which three? Did you try all combinations? And why does bringing back the age of a cell to zero cause cancer?
Both excellent questions. So the first is we tried for 2 years. And by we, I mean my students. Wan Cheng Lu is the student who deserves the credit. And he almost quit because it was so hard, and he kept causing cancer cells instead of reversing aging.
Why did he almost quit? Like, did he come into your office crying and said, Dr. Sinclair, I'm going to quit?
It was David, and he was pretty weepy. He was resigned to failure. And, you know, Harvard students set a high bar for themselves. And after 2 years of failure, it's pretty tough. You know, these are students that have never failed a test in their life. And my job these days is mainly to just make sure they don't quit. And so I said to Wancheng, look, I've got a really good feeling. You got to trust me. I've been doing this for 25, 30 years now. I've got a good feeling. Let's keep going. Let's do a really good experiment and see what happens. And his suggestion was to leave out one of the Yamanaka factors that is known to cause cancer. It's called MYC, M-Y-C. And in retrospect, it's obvious, right? You leave out the gene that is causing problems. But we hadn't tried that yet because we thought, and most people thought, dogma was that you need it. But we thought, let's just leave it out and see if it still works. And what happened was his cells went back in age, but stopped at about 75% return and didn't go back 100% to age zero. And what happens when cells hit zero is they become a stem cell, and stem cells grow wildly. They don't know how to differentiate and become a tissue unless you coax them. And when you do that in animals, you get what are called teratomas, which are horrible masses of cells, and it kills the animal. So we don't want to make cells zero because they'll just keep growing.
Take a quick break. If you like this episode, I'd really, really appreciate it. It means so much to me. Please share it with your friends and subscribe to the podcast. Email me at altitra@gmail.com and tell me why you subscribed. Thanks. Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a three-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, of course, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a three-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers, and he waited a little too long, and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So when someone gets a stem cell transplant, let's say a leukemia patient has gone through chemo successfully, now needs a stem cell transplant to really get rid of the leukemia, are they getting cells like that are age zero, or are they aged a little bit, those stem cells?
They're aged a bit. They're not pure stem cells. They're not pluripotent stem cells injected. As far as I know, then nobody's doing that. That would be dangerous. They differentiate them. They turn them into a cell type, and then they put them back in so that the cells don't have runaway growth.
I see. They take the stem cells and they maybe make them a blood cell stem cell, and right. So now they can replace blood as opposed to just being the. So the epigenome doesn't tell the new stem cells, look, new guy, you're the new guys on in the camp. Here's what you do. The epigenome's not strong enough to take pluripotent stem cells and tell them what to do.
It is, but it needs the right signals. And if the cells aren't in the right niche, in the right part of the body, they don't get the chemical signals, and then they just grow in absence of any control factors. But if you implant stem cells into the right part of the body, let's say the lining of the gut or into the brain, they will get the right signals, and they may even trigger epigenetic control systems that are okay. But if you inject stem cells into your blood, they can just keep growing, and you'll die from that. But the epigenome is very, very powerful. It's been neglected for a long time because we didn't have the tools to study it. We could read DNA, but we couldn't read the epigenetic code that's layered on top. But we finally have those tools now, and what we're realizing is that the epigenome is king.
You know, and this might be too much in the weeds for my listeners, but I'm really curious, where is the epigenome? Like, we know that every cell's got DNA and RNA and all this stuff. There's this third thing. I learned the two things when I was in elementary school, but I didn't know about the epigenome.
Yeah, it's like, where is the matrix? What is the matrix? The epigenome are the control systems that tell gene A to be switched on and gene B to be switched off. And the way the cell does that, in a simplistic sense, is it wraps up the DNA or loops it out in a loop that's accessible to the cell and the machinery of the cell, the proteins. And so what the DNA isn't just a flailing strand of a long chemical 6 foot long in a cell. It's actually mostly bundled up with little loops where the genes can be accessed. But most of it's bundled up tightly so it cannot be accessed. That system is called the epigenome. And it changes depending on how you live and how old you are and how much stress and biological accidents happen. But when you're born, basically, you've got these beautiful patterns of bundles and loops of DNA. That's the epigenome. Now, what was tricky was to, first of all, show that those loops and bundles become untangled, and that's causing aging. That was this paper I was telling you about. That's what we think is going on. And then the next challenge was, how do you take that DNA strand that's now lost that pattern of bundles and loops and might now be all mostly loops, and now the cell's just reading the wrong genes, how do you possibly get those structures to go back? to where they came. And that was why it was almost ludicrous to suggest that it was possible. Even today, I get criticized from colleagues saying age reversal. How can that be possible? Well, what we're looking for in my lab is information that tells the cell which genes to bundle up again that have become opened up over time. And that is going to be the source of the backup copy. Exactly how that is arranged, you might say, well, what is that? What is the information that tells the cell how to be young again? I don't know what it is. I just can tell you, I know that it's there because we can tap into it with our experiments using the Yamanaka factors and some chemicals now.
So the Yamanaka factors, are they like an epigenome to the epigenome? Because they were there in the embryo, right? And they were basically telling the initial cells, hey, this is how you be a human. And are you suggesting that, okay, if we get three out of the four Yamanaka factors that essentially act like those initial stem cells that tell us how to be human, how to build an epigenome, is that what's happening?
Well, we think the process is different than what Yamanaka did. It's related, but it's different in that what Yamanaka did was to erase the identity of the cells, basically strip all those bundles and loops and start again. That we're not doing. We're actually doing the opposite. We're telling the cell how to remember how to behave, not losing its complete memory and identity. And, you know, if I draw it, if you're just listening, what I'm drawing is an inverted U shape. There's an optimum that we're trying to reach where the cells go back in time, remember their identity, and the higher it is, the better identity they have and better function. But if we go too far, then you lose it again. And that was what Yamanaka was doing to make his stem cells. And you're right, the Yamanaka factors are the epigenome to the epigenome. They are the trigger that sets forth a cascade of events that we're now elucidating that tells other proteins how to go and rearrange those loops of DNA somehow back to what they were before. And it involves enzymes that take chemicals off DNA called methyls. There are enzymes that are involved in putting chemical tags on the packaging proteins called histones. It's very complicated downstream of these three factors, and they seem to be the trigger. Now, what's interesting is why would it work in an old mouse or an old monkey or even an old human? Why would this be true? Why is the system still in existence? You know, we don't need to reverse aging, right? Why isn't it being lost to evolutionary time? The reason I think it still exists in us is that parts of our body regenerate, right? If we cut our liver in half, take it out, it'll grow back to a normal sized liver. Cut the arm off a salamander, it'll grow back to an arm. I hypothesize in the information theory of aging that this reset of the body through the three Yamanaka factors is used normally in nature, not to get younger, but to regenerate lost body parts and damaged body parts, which we as humans don't really do very well. But of course, other species continue to do much better than us.
I see. So because we're all sort of evolved from the same, you know, cells a billion years ago, there's some part of us that still contains that ability, and that might be encoded in the Yamanaka factors.
Yeah, remnants of this rejuvenation, rebuild, kind of like a Deadpool kind of system that is in us, but we just don't turn it on, whereas other species do. But now, hopefully, we have the tools to turn this on and repair ourselves like we were young again.
Now, would another approach be, like, if we were really excellent at gene editing, like far more than we are now, and we're getting better and better every year in terms of genomics, if we were excellent at gene editing, could we rebuild these DNA loops and not need the Yamanaka factors, or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if we were good enough. I prefer to take the approach that biology knows best. We've had more than a billion years of evolution, and we tap into what the cells like to use. I think cells are smarter than us. This has been my philosophy my whole career. That said, theoretically, if we knew which genes needed to be reset in each cell type, we could do that. It's an extremely difficult engineering problem because even adjacent cells that are microscopic distance apart might behave differently. And trying to target that system to each different cell is an overwhelmingly complex problem. Now, that doesn't mean that we couldn't, say, target nerve cells in the brain specifically to reset some of those, but I think a whole body reset currently is beyond my imagination for engineering, though never say never.
But these Yamanaka factors, what they do when you inject them in, these three out of the four, is they essentially, like a disease, spread through the body or the body part where you inject it, and all these bundles that are loose fritters of DNA now, they kind of get this wake-up call, hey, you used to be a loop, better get back there.
That's right. And how that works, we don't know. We think there are little flags on the genes that tell the cell this gene needs to be reset by twofold in a negative direction, or another gene would be fivefold in a positive direction. There's some information in there. We're looking for it. We have some breakthroughs just last week that I can't yet talk about. I think we may have found the information where and how it's stored that tells the cell where to go and what to do. And it's a whole new biology. So I'm crossing my fingers for my students that we're on the right track. What the Yamanaka factors are, they're not that mysterious. These are proteins that engage DNA. They find a sequence of letters in DNA. They're called transcription factors. And they find them, they stick to the DNA, and then they set off the activation of other genes. So these are genes that regulate other genes. That's all they are. But they're like a domino. Those three dominoes get set, and then the rest follows. And then the complexity ensues. But there's got to, in my view, there's got to be a program in the form of software, one-dimensional software, just like DNA, but probably not DNA, that records the youthful epigenome and allows the cell to re-engage and create these original structures of folding of the DNA so the cell can not just behave like it's young, but literally be young again.
So if there were no regulatory hurdles, what would you personally do right now? Would you inject these three Yamanaka factors into yourself? Or would you drink them? Or like, what would you do? Like, what do you see as happening, let's say, after the regulatory hurdles and let's say all your tests go well? What do you see happening?
Yeah. Well, you know, one is hypothetical, one is reality. The reality is that we put the three genes inside a domesticated virus called an AAV, and we inject it into the eye, and it infects the nerve cells and reverses the age of the optic nerve in those animals and hopefully people next year. And theoretically, you could inject it into your vein and have it infect your entire body, and that way you could, you know, see what happens when you reverse aging or turn on these factors in most of your cells. That is doable today. It'd be fairly expensive. It'd be fairly risky, but it is doable today. Would I do it hypothetically? Probably not. I think we need a bit more safety work, but I can imagine a day where, and it's not too far away, depending on the regulator's opinion, where somebody could be flooded with these viruses. And what we've got, James, which I want to mention, is from the outset of this study, going back to 2017, we engineered, or Wan Cheng, my student, engineered the system to have an on-off switch so that we could turn it off after we finished with it and turn it back on if we needed it again. And the way we did it, way he did it, was we just give the antibiotic doxycycline, which some people take for malaria. The antibiotic isn't acting as an antibiotic in this context. It just acts as an on-off switch for our virus. And so in the future, you could be flooded with the virus. It's in every cell or almost every cell, but you don't turn it on until you need it. So let's say you get injured or you start to get old or you lose your eyesight, your hearing. Then you take doxycycline for 2 months. In theory, if it works, you get younger, you look younger, you feel younger, your organs function better. You stop the antibiotic and you repeat that process every 5 years.
So I guess every organ or part of the body ages differently. Like with eyesight, it could be your cornea, it could be the nerves in the eye, it could be the brain cells that regulate vision. With your stomach and digestion, it's another set of cells would you need? But I guess if you're putting the Yamanaka factors in each organ specifically, it'll know what to do. It'll kind of like, you know, figure out the subculture of that organ, you know, get acclimated, make friends, and then do its job accordingly per organ.
Yeah. James, I love the way you think. It's deep thinking. The answer is yes. Somehow the Yamanaka factors know how to reset different types of cells. We haven't yet seen a cell type that does not respond to the reprogramming. And each cell type is different. Of course, a brain cell is very different in terms of the packaging that it needs compared to a muscle cell. And so, yeah, there is a culture within the cell. Perhaps it's this system that we're trying to figure out, which is this backup copy that is specific to each cell. And so the cell individually, they know what they need to go back to. And it's perhaps different literally for every cell in the body, the pattern that needs to go back to. And we don't even know yet how and when that is laid down. Is it when the baby is born? Is it when you're a teenager? Is it different for different organs? Does your liver become set in youth at 2 and your brain at 20? These are really interesting questions that we want to address.
So what does that determine? How much you need to age the stem cells basically for each organ? Or,
well, so let's say that the backup copy of youth is a chemical that gets added to DNA. Just hypothetically, that might be the method. And so there's an enzyme that puts a chemical on DNA that says this gene needs to stay at this level to be young. But over time, it drifts away, it becomes unraveled, and now it's causing problems. There's a detector of that chemical on the DNA that the Yamanaka factors cause to go there. And then it uses that chemical's tag to say, all right, this gene, even though it's unraveled, this little chemical tag says it actually should be bundled. So let's bundle it up. And that happens 22,000 times across the entire genome, allowing the cell to repackage its DNA earlier. What I'm saying is maybe these little chemical tags on the DNA get laid down at different times during development. Or maybe it's all, you know, you wake up on your 12th birthday and suddenly you've got all these tags on your body and that's your reset stage. We don't know that. It's just speculation.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
You know, I'm curious about like the brain in particular. Like the other day, so this is a specific example. The other day, I learned how to ski for the first time. I went skiing for the first time. And at one point, the instructor and I were walking and we passed these little kids and they waved hi to the instructor. And I said, oh, did you give lessons to those kids? And he said, yeah, 3 weeks ago, I gave them a couple of lessons. And I said, what do you mean? They're on the line for the Black Diamond Hill. Like they're going, like I'm not going to be able to do that in 3 weeks. They're going down the hardest hill on this mountain just 3 weeks after you're giving lessons. And I watch them and they're just like effortless. You know, it's almost like they're not using any muscles. They're just cruising on down. They're going as fast as possible. They're fearless. And I don't believe the example, the cliche that, oh, they don't have as far to fall, so they're not that worried about falling. Like, they were literally doing it differently because of their brain and mindset than I would do it. And what is happening in there's something in the aging process, but a difference between me and those kids. Like, what has happened to the brain?
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, you're right. The young brain has is very plastic, learns very quickly. Old brains don't. We know that. The reason I believe that happens is you're aging due to epigenetic changes. So your nerve cells are starting to turn on genes that shouldn't be turned on in the brain. So your nerve cells might be starting to behave a bit like skin cells, which is not going to help you learn. It's not going to help you remember things well. And that's why we did a study in mice where we aged the mice, and they were hard of learning. You know, you could say they had dementia. And then we could reverse the age of the brain in those old mice, and we could ask the question, can they learn like they were young again? And the answer is yes, they can. So I really think that the inability to learn is just a matter of epigenetic aging.
So, like, and you were able to reverse this using the 3 out of 4 Yamanaka factors. It was part of those experiments?
Yeah.
Is there, okay, and I'm just asking selfishly, like, I want to reverse the aging in my brain right now. I want to learn like when I was a kid again. What can I do?
Until we have viruses that are safe for injection into your veins, which is a while away, what we're working on are chemicals that will do the same thing, so that it could be swallowed or put on the skin or injected. And we published a paper, when was it, July last year, the first proof of concept study that we could find chemical cocktails that reverse the age of cells and restored that epigenome. And we've come a long way since then. It's not published yet, but we are down to some really exciting chemicals that could theoretically be put into a drink and consumed that may rejuvenate the body, improve memory, for example. Don't get me wrong, I'm not going to be putting this into a drink just this year, but I think if the animal studies work out and we do some human studies, then that's it's a goal worthy of my attention.
And I'm not trying to figure out the chemicals just so I could go to the store and buy these, but is it like NMN related or is it Yamanaka related? Like what types of chemicals are these?
Yeah. So these
are chemicals. Is it vitamin D, vitamin K?
It's not that simple. There's cocktails, so there isn't just one answer. But we're at a point where we now have it down to one chemical that can reverse the age, ostensibly reverse the age of cells in the dish, can treat human cells, make them younger, make them grow, even if they've stopped dividing, senescent cells. And, barring any safety issues, which of course you can't ignore, it could be made available. So right now, could you go out and buy some of these? Well, I do know that some people have looked at our publication from July and have started taking those chemicals or surrogates of those. But they're doctors. You need a prescription. So it's not that simple. You can't just go out and buy it. And it's not just a vitamin. It's a bit more complicated than that. But trust that I'm now laser focused on making this come true, if it's possible, if it's safe. It's not here yet, but it will be if I can do anything about it.
You know, when you last came on to talk about this, I did follow a lot of your advice, like in terms of intermittent fasting, you know, occasional high intensity exercise, of course, sleep, and the various supplements you take, I take, and how much of these lifestyle factors are sufficient to compare with this chemical cocktail that you're putting together?
We haven't put them side by side, but I don't think anything that is out there compares to this. We don't see the usual suspects, rapamycin, NMN, doing this reset. They might assist in the process, but these chemicals are in a different league of their own. And so I think this is probably why people are skeptical about my use of the term age reversal, because they're not seeing the results that I see in my lab. And we clearly see that aging is reversible. And these new discoveries are really, really powerful, more powerful than anything I've seen before.
So reversible in the sense, like, let's take an extreme example. And this is something we almost, I believe we briefly talked about back in 2020 or 2019. Can a female mouse who has reached menopause reverse menopause?
We did that. And by we, I mean my team in Australia. Lindsay Wu was the first author. So we gave them old mice, the equivalent age, human age of 70, 65 maybe. We gave them NMN, and it was just a month later that they were able to produce viable eggs and had normal offspring. And that, as far as I am aware, is the only known, or at least it was the first known way to reverse what we call mousopause.
So that's incredible, but that's not what you're talking about with this new chemical cocktail you're talking about reversing aging with.
It's different. What worked in the mice was we stabilized their DNA, and that's the main problem with infertility in females. The eggs trash their chromosomes. And there was a protein, one of the sirtuins, that actually was the problem. And by raising NAD, we could make sure the chromosomes were nicely packaged in the egg. An old egg, by the way, the chromosomes are all torn apart. It's quite terrible. There's no way you're going to produce an offspring for one of those. But it's different. It's different. This new age reset isn't just for eggs. It seems to work on every cell type. And you don't just go back a little bit. You seem to go back a lot, 50%, 75% in age, and reset the pattern of what we call gene expression. And what's interesting is it's not just a temporary reset. We've co-published a paper recently that when we essentially cure glaucoma in a mouse and turn off the Yamanaka factors, the effect continues, right? It's not that you need to keep the factors on. It's truly a reset. And then the mouse gets old again. And then you just can keep resetting. We know we can reset the body at least twice. I'm not sure there's actually a limit to it other than in these experiments, the mice got old and died, but their eyes were beautiful at the end of the experiment. I'm looking forward to us getting better at reprogramming the body of mice so we can make them live longer. There was a recent study that was published, not from my lab, but a group that used our system, and they gave it to old mice. They put the Yamanaka virus into the vein instead of the eye, and those mice were very old, and their remaining lifespan was doubled, 109% extra life.
Wow.
Which, you know, is a good beginning, but I would love to be able to make a mouse that could live for, two, three times. But the technology is not really there yet. The biggest obstacle is getting the virus into all the cells evenly. And viruses like to pile up in the liver and a few other places. And so what people are doing, not me, but people who have the skill in viruses, they're engineering viruses and even other types of delivery vehicles like nanoparticles that can evenly spread across the body and deliver genes.
So let's say there's someone like you and a lab like yours in China. And I'm assuming there must be labs working in China on similar things. Maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm not. But, they have no ethical barriers to what they're trying. Wouldn't they already be injecting humans with this and we would start to know what results they're getting?
Possibly. I haven't heard about it. It wouldn't surprise me though if some people in South America started doing this. I've heard that people are doing gene therapy on themselves already down there. So, this is not too far from that.
And for you, like to prove, okay, so first step is you proved, there's some effect in mice. How do you then prove safety in humans? Like, do you have to get humans to agree to the risks and get injected with small amounts, or what happens?
So that's been my work with the company that I co-founded. It's called Life Biosciences here in Boston. They've been working since 2018 on this. And so you do a lot of studies in mice to see what the mice can tolerate. You turn it on for the rest of their life, see if they get cancer. The answer is no. You inject it in the whole body. Do they can't get cancer? The answer is no so far. And then what the company did, I shouldn't say we, but the company did studies in monkeys. So they injected the virus and turned it on in the retinas of monkeys that had poor vision, and their vision improved and there was no issue with the safety, seemingly. And so they're doing some more of those studies. And then with that data, our plan is to go to the FDA, who we're already talking to, so they're aware of our plans, and giving us some advice, or at least pointers. I don't know if they're allowed to give advice, but they definitely give feedback about what we need to do for them to approve a human study in the US. And things look good. I don't see any obstacle currently why we shouldn't be asking for volunteers who are blind as early as this time next year. Hmm. And they have to be volunteers, of course. It's a clinical trial. But if you wake up blind, which can happen, you get a stroke in the back of the eye, you know, what have you got to lose? If I was blind, I would try it.
Is it kind of a, not to use the word here, but is it a double blind trial in the sense that some people will get the cure and some people will not, and you don't know who is who?
Well, the plan is that everybody will get the treatment just at different stages. So some people will get it early, some people will get the antibiotic later, and so each person can be their own control. But yeah, we don't currently plan to leave anybody out of this trial.
And then how long does it take to determine safety? Do they have to live out their lives and then you know it's safe?
No, I don't think so. So, you know, it's beyond my area of expertise. My understanding, though, is because there's no current treatment for blindness, and you can't reverse glaucoma currently, the FDA and regulators around the world look more favorably on treatments where there's nothing else you can do. So my hope actually is that those studies, if they're successful, we do another large-scale study, and that would be sufficient for the drug to be approved.
It's really fascinating. And then I guess once it's safe, I don't know what phase that is, phase one or phase two, then you start what's the next phase after that?
So phase one is safety. Mm-hmm. This is different because it's the eye. You get the safety and the efficacy, the results in the same trial. So this is a phase 1/2 study. So then if all goes well, you know, fingers crossed, what you're left with is a phase 3 study, which is expanding it into hundreds of patients, maybe thousands, to see how safe it is. Given that it's a gene therapy, probably the number of patients will not be in the thousands, like something like a diabetes trial would. I think that a phase 3 probably would take 1 to 2 years. That's typically what they take. So if you want to know when is this available on the market to everybody in the US, you know, we're still a few years away. And I always say a few years away and it ends up being more. So, but we will see. What's exciting to me is the eye is a much faster path than something like diabetes, where you need to be testing it for a long time for safety, and you have to spend a couple of years testing it before you can even see if it works.
Would the same drug, though, that works on the eye have off-label use for diabetes if you inject it in the gut or wherever diabetes happens?
I'm aware of research that I'm an author on that these factors help with blood pressure. I'm not aware of it helping with diabetes in a mouse yet. We haven't tested that, just to address that. But can it be used off-label? Well, I wouldn't condone that, right? That said, off-label use of drugs is used all the time, especially for compassionate use. And you know,
I'm just wondering though if the cocktail is specific for the eye, like it's programmed for the eye.
The type of virus is better for the eye than the whole body. You'd want to re-engineer it to infect the whole body. So specifically, we're using what's called an AAV number 2 for the eye. In the mouse whole body, we use AAV 9. So probably it's not the best to use the eye version. Hmm.
Well, it all sounds very interesting. I'm really excited about all the, like, you wrote the book Lifespan. What year was that? 2019 or 2018?
Exactly. Yeah,
and 2019. We spoke about that several times, and it's a fascinating read about aging and your approach to it. Your approach as aging as a disease rather than just something we should accept, and all the different research you summarize. And it's very exciting now to see how 5 years later, where the research has taken you. And I didn't know about any of these advances that you have. And oh, yeah, David, there was one question I wanted to ask. I had a podcast recently, and this started off, I was speaking at a men's group. There were several hundred men on this men's group, and I was speaking about some random thing, and suddenly everybody started talking about testosterone. I'm 56 years old, and people were asking me, do you take testosterone? Everybody was saying, you have to take testosterone. And people were saying it's an anti-aging thing, testosterone for men. And we posted this clip on some social media, and a lot of people were arguing against this. There was a whole battle in the comments that I was not involved in because I don't know anything. But what's your stance on testosterone? And this has nothing to do with anything you've been talking about, but I'm just curious about what your stance is on this is in terms of aging and male aging and so on.
Yeah. So I know a fair bit about this. One of my good friends and collaborators with the clinical trials actually has done a lot of testosterone studies in humans. And so I'm hearing it really from the horse's mouth here. There's a lot of data, and it's dangerous to summarize. I will anyway. Testosterone is helpful for some things, okay? Maintaining and building muscle mass, yes. Is that good for old men? Absolutely. We lose muscle mass all the time. Does it extend lifespan? Is it true anti-aging? Is it slowing down the process? The answer there seems to be no. So it's in between. It's useful, it's helpful during aging, but it's not an anti-aging medicine. And then the third thing I want to add is, I work with a lot of people who come to me for advice, and often it's, should I take testosterone? I've seen some really good results naturally building up testosterone levels, working on the larger muscles of the body, like your legs and your back. Tunkat Ali, for instance, is a supplement that's been shown time and time again to raise testosterone. And speaking for myself, I naturally raise my own testosterone through those means and don't have to take it.
What was the supplement you mentioned?
Oh, Tongkat, T-O-N-G-K-A-T, and then A-L-I. It's a Southeast Asian plant extract.
And it helps actually. Do you have some kind of Southeast Asian insight into this?
Well, yeah, because this is what we usually take when I'm from Malaysia, but Tongkat Ali is what we usually advise people would take in Southeast Asia. That's why I'm like, oh, I know that name. It's very familiar.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that's becoming popular is taking low-dose Viagra or, sildenafil. These are nitric oxide donor medicines, and low-dose seems to be helpful in maintaining what's called endothelial function, your blood vessels, health, and that declines with age. And it probably will help your sex life as well. The goal, though, is to keep your blood vessels youthful and flowing. And so I'm currently trying that, and it does seem to give me the benefits of exercise without having to exercise a lot. It's just my personal experience. I can't say it's a clinical trial, but I did want to mention that because it I've heard it from many doctors that this is a thing that they're looking into and advising their patients.
It's so funny. I can't imagine taking low dose Viagra in order to perform better at a chess tournament, for instance.
It could help though. I'm just trying it out. I'm like to experiment to see what works and what doesn't. That's something that, it's got this stigma because it's an erectile dysfunction drug, but really it was developed to help with blood flow in the beginning. And my mother was on it actually because she had lung cancer and one lung removed. And I remember trying to get Viagra for my mother and getting all these pop-up ads on my computer for Viagra. And I was thinking, it's not for me, but, never say never.
That's funny. Oh, well, okay, David, once again, thank you for spending the time while you're saving civilization and the human species. Thank you for spending the time on the podcast. I really appreciate it. I hope we can update it again at some point. And yeah, thanks for coming on.
You're welcome, James. I get asked to go on podcasts a lot, and I typically don't because I'm focused on the research. Obviously, I love what you do. People should read your books. They're awesome.
Oh, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
I appreciate the really great questions. That's what's special about your podcast.
Thank you.
Remember the Thai cave rescue? What about the mission depicted in Black Hawk Down or the epic rescue shown in Captain Phillips? You've probably heard of all of these, but did you know that the U.S. Air Force Special Warfare played a pivotal role in all of them? These airmen are the most highly trained warriors on the planet. Other forces like the SEALs and Army Rangers call on them to provide skills no one else can. Not many people make the cut. If you think you can, visit airforce.com to learn more.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.